This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Great Radio. Joy 94.9.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Andrew the Apprentice and RV Miller are with you. And joining us on the line is our compassionate counsellor, Stu Fenton. Good evening, Stu.
Hello.
Gosh, that was loud. You're in country Victoria. You're not supposed to be that loud on my phone.
But we're used to him being in Sydney.
Yes, he was much further away.
Now he's in country Victoria. It's a lot louder.
Yeah.
Now, Stu, you have moved recently.
Yes.
And I suppose that raises our question for this evening, which we really hope our listeners join in on 0427JOY949 or emailing onair@joy.org.au. And that is the question, how do you build social networks as an adult?
Do you mean as an adult gay man or just as an adult?
Oh, just as an adult, I think, generally. There's probably a few differences, but there's also a lot of similarities, I would have thought.
Well, I think we live in a very fortunate time in regard to technology in this area because, you know, the place I've moved back into a small country town in Victoria after living in Sydney and London and Montreal and New York and all these really big
cities. Yeah, rub it in, Stu, why don't you?
But I would never in my wildest dreams have ever thought that I would move back to the country town that I grew up in, which is a population of like 1,100 people. And the part of the reason for that is that I think technology is really good. And so I don't feel like one of the reasons I wanted to escape the country town I was in when I was younger was because it just felt so small town and so disconnected from all the really big, exciting things in the world. And now I kind of feel like I can go back there and get a bit of solitude and enjoy that small town feel, but not feel disconnected from the world. And I think obviously Facebook is probably the number one aspect of that. And I think there are some positive aspects to Facebook, like staying connected to the rest of the world. And but I think also, you know, I mean, I think the phone apps and the internet sort of, they have their positives and their negatives, but in terms of establishing yourself, you know, especially as a gay man in a small town, you know, these applications, whether they're Scruff or Grindr or whatever, or Tinder or whatever there is, you can use them for your own purposes. Yeah, you don't. And I mean, the great thing about those things, you can use them for sex, or you can also use them for connecting with people. And some of the connections I've already made in the small town I've moved to have been through some of those applications when there's been no, it's not been about sex at all.
So, was it surprising? Yeah, as you mentioned, there were, you know, 1,100 people in a small country town. Was it surprising when you turned the application on, you actually found people in your town?
I'm not saying I found anyone in my actual little town.
And, right.
And much to my dismay, I'm not the only gay. I'm not the only gay in the village. There's several of us. But, within 25 kilometres, which is pretty good, and there were quite a few, and people that I started having interesting conversations with, and I started to say, what's it like here? And they'd say, hope you brought some warm clothes. And well, so, yeah.
Look, I think I live 25 kilometres away from Melbourne, so I think it's quite good, quite frankly. Now, do you think that there is a shift or a difference between, you know, you sort of, you obviously made a geographical move, but almost a similar thing has to be done if somebody comes out late in life. You know, they may have been closeted, they may have been married, you know, they may have lived one particular lifestyle and then decided later on, hey, that's not actually who I am. I now have to reinvent and reintroduce myself. What do you think some of the challenges in sort of reestablishing a social network at that stage are?
Well, when you suggested this topic to me tonight, I actually loved it because I have had a client and still work with a client who is trying to make that change in their life. And I have been quite surprised, I guess because we immerse ourselves in the scene and everything gets to be quite easy for us, how to meet people, like especially if you live in a city like Sydney or Melbourne. But working with this client who decided he wanted to come out in his mid-30s, I was quite shocked at how difficult it was for him. You know, I mean, part of that was due to the context of his nationality and his religion and everything. But the other part of it was just his enormous fear of just walking into a bar or a club, which is the way that I, you know, when I came out 23 years ago.
Yeah. It can be very daunting.
Very daunting is an understatement for this person, because he's almost terrified, you know, like the questions that come up for him is, what would I say to someone? And this is also someone, you know, the kind of person who has never even gone into one of those environments, really. You know, they've spent some time in a gay area of a city, but not actually had to go into a bar or start a conversation or do that kind of stuff. And so, to be honest, the way I started working with him was, I didn't want to suggest that he go into a bar or a club, because I'm not convinced that would be the best place for someone who's never been out on the scene before. So I suggest, because he likes going to the gym, so I just suggested maybe having a few casual visits at one of the gayer kind of gyms, because that way you get to do the thing you like to do, but you don't, and you, there's a chance you'll start meeting people and having conversations, but you know, it's not like there's going to be loud music and drugs and all that kind of stuff.
And I suppose that also lends us towards some of the social or sporting groups. You know, if he's a gym goer, if he's a sportsman, you might possibly suggest joining a gay sports team like the Chargers or the Glamourhead Sharks, or you know, the Argonauts and those kind of guys, where it's a more social event.
Well, that's also, I think, what's the enormous benefit of the evolving of the gay scene, not just in Australia, but in the world, with all these sporting teams and sporting clubs. And, you know, like I know that there were cases in some of these sporting clubs where the gay club was hosted by a much larger heterosexual club, and some of the people playing on the heterosexual, well, I shouldn't say heterosexual teams, but they're just sort of mainstream teams, got the confidence to actually come out when the gay team became a part of their club. So they just transferred from one team to the other. And I just love those stories, because I think there was something in there that carried a message of, it's okay to, you know, like, being gay is becoming a much more acceptable part of society, and so it was okay for them to move from that club into the other club and then get into the culture of that club without having to be right in the thick of, you know, a dance party or a Mardi Gras or whatever for them to explore their sexuality and to find a way to come out.
We've had a message in on our Twitter account.
I know. Andrew's very excited about this.
Yeah, yeah. Hide Seek on Joy is our Twitter account.
Yeah.
And Elliot has messaged in to say, when I moved from New Zealand, I met people at the cafe I worked at, the aerobics course I attended, and the nightclub I frequented. Well, that's very much what we're talking about.
I suppose there's an interesting question that I've been posed, you know, where you go to, whether it's a gay pub or nightclub, or the more adventurous types who go to a sauna or a sex on premises venues, and the question is, what if you bump into somebody you know? And of course the response is, well, they're in the place for the same reason you are. You know, and it's getting over that hurdle, that realization that if I bump into somebody that I know at a gay club, then they're either going to be pretty friendly or there for the same reason.
Well, exactly. And, you know, like, that all comes down to, you know, how you want to be seen or not seen by the people, you know, in your work environment. Like, I can have to disclose something, which I guess I can, but I just do remember in the 90s when I occasionally went to those places, there was a particular person who always used to walk around with a baseball cap on, pulled down very low. And, I mean, I always knew who he was, but it's funny, you know, that's, people regulate how they appear to others, you know, depending on what they want to do or give away. And, you know, and then there's other people in those places who are quite happy to come up and chat and talk about stuff. And sometimes those places don't have to, obviously, have to be that sexual. They can be very social, a good way of meeting people.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. We're chatting to Stu Fenton, our compassionate counsellor. How do you build social networks as an adult? Let us know, 0427 JOY 949, or email onair@joy.org.au.
Hide and seek.
It's your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
The most diverse sound for the most diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
Bang.
Yeah, you had to wait for that one.
Yeah,
didn't
yeah.
You? You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Across the desk from me is Andrew the Apprentice. I'm Avi Miller. And hopefully still on the line is Stu Fenton, our compassionate counsellor. We are talking building new social networks if you're an adult. Now, I have a curveball for you, Stu.
Oh.
Well, there you go. One of the things that occurred to me when I was thinking about this is what happens in the event of a breakup. Particularly if you know you and your ex have been together for a while, you've built a social network as a couple, and now you're not anymore.
Well, I think that one's just the same for heterosexual couples or gay couples, you know, alike. Because I mean, I have worked with some people, and it can be very distressing because the friends of, you know, the partners never quite know. Some of them know very well where to put their allegiance, and some get very confused, and often one, you know, person loses out completely. It's a very difficult situation, and it sort of has to be navigated as well as possible. But I don't think there's any real control that any one partner can have over that, because the friends are going to make their decisions based on their own judgments or opinions about what happened in the breakup, I guess, you know. And if a person's lucky, then the people will try and bracket their judgments and sort of share their friendship still in the way they did before, but just without the couple together, I guess.
It is kind of challenging, though. Particularly, you know, we say that they are the gay meccas of Melbourne and Sydney, but they're still pretty small towns for social groups, if you like. You know, so I suppose the challenge in that regard is, you know, you went to the pub and now you're still going to the pub and you still see the same people, and you have these events where everybody's kind of having to navigate a new social network, if you like.
You mean talking about the partners?
Yeah, the partners and the friends. You know, one might sit on one side of the pub, the other one might sit on the other side of the pub, and there's this movement back and forth, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it is a difficult situation, but I do think also, again, technology has changed the face of that whole social networking thing too, in that if a person was really worried, and this often happens, that they're going to go out and see their partner or see their partner's friends or, you know, have people talk to one another, they can, for a period of time while they're going through the healing and the readjusting phase, use Facebook to socialise or use, you know, some of those chat applications to still get their social needs met. Often too, one of the partners will become quite reclusive and just want to sort of lick their wounds a little bit and heal. And hopefully, if they've got at least one or two good friends, they can depend on them to sort of support them until they're through that part of it. But I agree, it's obviously going to be very hard because we are a small social group, and it's not like the mainstream society where you can go to a vastly... There's so many different places you could go and socialise, so it is a bit tricky.
If you're on the other side of the fence, so you're a friend of a couple that break up, what are some of the tips you would might have for someone in that situation and dealing with a couple that you've been friends with for a long time and they've broken up? But what do you say to them?
Well, I mean, my suggestion would be, you're talking about if you're the friend of a couple and they've broken up. Well, I mean, I think the best thing is if you have more of an allegiance to one, like let's say you know one partner in the couple longer than the other, and they sort of think that or demand that you not have anything to do with the other. I think the best thing that you can do is keep your friendship with that person, but remain neutral with the other person as much as possible. I've never ever got a sense that judging someone or hurting someone or gossiping about someone is the good way to go at all. But I think that you try and do least harm as possible, and that happens by remaining neutral. And I mean, I think the other thing too is you could at least talk to the other partner and just say, you know, because sometimes what happens is one of the partners gets left with no one.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest part.
And I was interested in your talk about using online and the social networks like Facebook or the applications, because of course there is talk about those as almost distancing, because people rely too heavily on online conversation. They don't actually interact face to face. But you see a lot of value in that interaction as well.
Yeah, look, I agree, though, with that idea that gets brought up that they, I think it happened in one of our segments a few segments back, was talking about how they can actually be really isolating. And I think that, and that it actually impedes people learning to have healthy social intimate contact that is not necessarily sexual. And so I do think used in moderation, though, it's okay. Like I've had experiences where I've met someone on one of those applications and then started a friendship with them where we go swimming or we will go out for breakfast and start a normal friendship. So I think if you're aware of the pitfalls of it, that it can just turn into you sitting alone in a room on a computer talking to someone all the time, which is, I think, the downside of it. But if you can sort of then make sure that you're connecting with people and talking to them on a regular basis face-to-face, then that's okay. So much of this is just simply about awareness and looking at your choices and what you choose to do. I think, too, in the country, like in country areas like here, it's okay to use it for that purpose too, but you still got to make sure you meet up with people.
Are there any tricks you've got to, I suppose it's almost force your way into an invitation to an event? Because sometimes you can see, and Facebook is a clear example of this, you can have a network of friends, you see they're all going to a barbecue or something. How do you get yourself an invite to that?
Is this still counselling?
I think this is more in-depth.
No.
And you might have a...
No.
Gate crashing,
yeah.
Look, I mean...
If they don't know how to handle their privacy settings on Facebook properly, I'm showing up.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, if you're doing that, then that's a whole different... got on altogether anyway. Then you've just got to try and... I guess I'm imagining, not from personal experience, you would have to locate someone who's going to the barbecue,
yeah,
who you're friends with, and start to ask them very innocent questions.
Yes, what are you doing this afternoon? That sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And hint that you're at a loose end.
Yeah.
Well, Stu, we're no longer at a loose end. Thank you so much for joining us on Hide and Seek this evening.
No worries. I've had a good laugh. Thank you.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Coming up right after this, we'll be having a chat to Heath and his life journey.
His journey, we're going to say it. You're on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.